believed very much in God, mm-hmm. prayed, read the Bible, studied new archaeological finds as they came out on the Bible and other Christian texts. But again, no belief in the divinity of Jesus, peace be upon him, no belief in a Trinity. And I basically continued in this line as an atypical Christian from 1974 until 1993. Mm-hmm. But the turning point actually started a couple years before I became a Muslim. It was 1991, mm-hmm. and my wife and I for several years had been doing research on the history of the Arabian horse. And we had some Arabic documents.
What's the Arabian horse?
The Arabian horse? Well,
yeah.
Well, it's a horse.
For people who...
The Arabian horse is a horse that was bred for centuries mm-hmm. by the Bedouins of the Middle East.
Okay.
They typically have one less vertebrae in their back and one less vertebrae in their tail mm-hmm. than other horses, and they are the preeminent endurance horse.
Yes.
So we'd been studying the history of the Arabian horse for a mm-hmm. number of years and been writing about it, and we had some Arabic documents, hujjas, that had accompanied a shipment of horses in 1906 to the United States. Mm-hmm. These were the Arabic testimonials of purity and about the origin of these horses that came over in that year. Mm-hmm. We wanted to get them translated.
Mm-hmm.
And they hadn't been translated up to this point in time.
Yes.
And this brought us into contact with a portion of the Arab community in Denver, Colorado, that happened to be Muslim. And our first such contact occurred in the summer of 1991, and it was with Brother Jamal. And he came out to our farm, looked at our horses, glanced at the Arabic documents, and said, sure, he'd be happy to translate them for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we began that process a little bit here, a little bit there. But along the way, a very close friendship developed.
Yes.
And before long, we were getting together on a weekly to bi-weekly basis, just socially.
You weren't a little nervous, skeptical, thinking like, you know, had some preconceived ideas or notions that, you know, what you might have seen on TV that, you know, I got to be careful, this guy might be some kind of terrorist or some kind of...
Well, again, we're talking 1991, so it's a little before...
A little before all the drama.
Yeah, but no, I didn't have any such feelings whatsoever. Along the way, and it's important, I think, to point this out, Jamal never proselytized.
Mm-hmm.
He never said, this is the way to believe.
Yes.
He never said, you ought to become a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
However, that first time he came out to the farm, before he left, he asked if he might use our restroom to make ablution
mm-hmm.
Before praying. And he came out of the restroom and then said, you know, may I borrow a piece of newspaper to put on the floor so that I can pray.
So this is the ritual washing before
yes,
one.
Yes, and then we gave him the newspaper, and he laid it out on the floor, and he did his prescribed prayer.
Uh-huh.
Now, again, he never said anything to us about, hey, are you Muslims, or why aren't you Muslims, or you should be doing this. His dawah, or his preaching, was in his behavior.
His actions, huh?
Yeah, his example. He prayed.
Yeah.
A very powerful form of preaching, actually.
Yeah. Describe this prayer for us, please, for those who have never seen
it. Well, it was
the
standard Islamic prayer. It had the different postures. You begin standing, and then there are some things that you say. This was during the day, so he was saying them to himself.
Yeah.
And then you bow, mm-hmm. and then after bowing, you stand again, and then you prostrate, and then you kneel, and then you prostrate, and you go through this cycle, called a rakat.
Did you think he was praying maybe to a moon god, or did you think...
No, of course not.
No. Who did you think he was praying to?
To God.
To God?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. His understanding of God.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, social contact continued. We were getting together once every week to every 2 weeks. And as he continued to translate stuff for us occasionally, he would begin to share with us knowledge about the history of the Arabian horse in the Middle East.
Yes.
And along the way of doing that, he began to quote different verses from the Quran
mm-hmm.
or different sayings of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, different aspects of Islam, not to proselytize, but to give us a way of understanding the Islamic context of the history of the Arabian horse.
Yes.
So again, it was all presented not as proselytizing, but as you're interested in the history of the Arabian horse, I will seek to meet your needs. Mm-hmm. But in doing that, I'm going to have to explain this context to you so you really understand it.
Yes.
So this continued on, and over the next 16 months, our contact expanded, not just with Jamal, but also with Wael and his family, with Amr and his family, Ahmed and his family, etc.
These were just other Muslims.
We're getting together socially, again, no active or direct proselytizing going on. But in the process of observing these Muslim brothers, I became increasingly impressed with their behavior. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were living a very moral and ethical life, bending over backwards to do it, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
I remember Jamal, who ran at that time sort of a mom-and-pop grocery store in Denver.
Yeah.
And I was at the store once when the state weights inspector came by mm-hmm. to examine the scales.
Yes.
And he examined them and came, told Jamal, you know, they're within tolerance. And Jamal said, well, look, this is what I want you to do. I want you to turn them against me mm-hmm. to the limits of what's tolerance in the state.
Yeah.
Because I want to make sure I'm not shortchanging my customers.
Wow.
So I mean, this is the sort of behavior I was observing. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just ethics in terms of their business life. It was the ethics in terms of their family life, the way they interacted with their wives, with their children, etc. Very powerful behavioral example. Mm-hmm. And I observed this for about 16 months. And finally, oh, it must have been in December of 1992, I got around to asking myself the sort of the fundamental question, which is, what separates these Muslim friends of mine from me in terms of belief? Where's the difference? Mm-hmm. Now, I had studied Islam sort of superficially
yes.
or briefly back at Harvard in comparative religions courses. But this question was eating at me. Mm-hmm. I mean, here are these people living these very moral and upright lives. My wife and I have been trying to do that as well, but we felt that we were sort of doing that within the context of a moral vacuum.
Yeah.
What separates me from them in terms of actual religious beliefs? Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose I could have asked them.
Yeah.
I didn't want to.
Okay.
I didn't want to impinge on our friendship.
Yeah.
And so I went downstairs, began dusting off all the books on Islam mm-hmm. I had acquired back in those comparative religions courses.
Yes.
And they were all written by non-Muslim Western scholars. Mm-hmm. And there's probably a half a dozen or more of them. And I took them down, I reread them. I took down two different translations of the meaning of the Quran that mm-hmm. I had acquired back in those courses, read them. And the more I read, the more I said, oh, wait a minute. You know, this is what I believe.
Starting to connect.
Yeah, very much starting to connect. And the other thing that eventually happened in that process was, as I continued to read in the English translations of the meaning of the Quran, especially where it was talking about biblical history
yes,
and biblical concepts, I saw within the Quran statements about these things that I knew could not have been known by any illiterate 7th century Arab. And of course, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, was illiterate.
He didn't know how to read, write. The history confirms this.
Yes, yes.
And he was known as the truthful.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And so now I'm left with a question.
Yeah.
Where did this come from?
So you're looking at this and you're like, this can't...
He couldn't
come
have known
from this man or
he
any man.
No, he couldn't have known it.
Uh-huh.
And so that left me with the conclusion, you know, this had to be inspired.